From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of November 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, Dan O'Brien from K-State will join us to discuss the agricultural energies. We'll also hear from Don Day today of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He'll help us walk through the weather forecast for the Midwest, along with what's happening in other parts of the world as it relates to the growing areas. And we'll start the first in a series of nutrient loss podcasts that I produce, this time around on livestock and manure management. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, now joins us. Thanks for being with us this afternoon, Wayne.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, it's a turnaround Tuesday, and soybeans managed to take away about a dime to 12 cents, maybe a bit more than that, of the losses that were put in place yesterday. Why did that happen?
Well, I think there was a couple of things that happened. First off, President Trump in his speech last night said that if we don't get something settled, why they're going to go ahead with the tariffs. And for a difference, the Chinese did not respond with their saying that we don't take well to threats. That was the number one thing, and we saw that maybe some of the markets were back in covering when they didn't respond that way. But later in the day, we saw that there's news that a U.S. tax extenders bill includes a plant animal-based feedstock biodiesel credit starting at a dollar and followed by a gradual phase out by the year 2024. And that brought the funds in. They bought 4,300 contracts of soy oil today on that news. So the soy oil was what pushed the bean market up as we went on through the day.
Wait a second. So I wasn't paying enough attention getting ready to go to Kansas City. Is that the extenders tax the same as the soy diesel tax, the splash tax, or is it something different?
I read you what the newswire said. It says that the U.S. tax extenders bill includes a plant animal-based feedstock biodiesel credit. It's going to start at a dollar, and then it will gradually phase out by 2024.
It sounds like the biodiesel tax credit that they get, and it's renewed. I mean, usually it's renewed every year, but I don't know whether it's included other things. Maybe it just is. And the big news, if that's really what it is, or whether it's not, the big news is that it extends, well, it extends through 2020. So is it retroactive to, does it say there?
That was all they give on that.
Yeah. So, that's all right. So it was there. That was there. That's good. I'll see if I can come up with it and figure out what that means. But the interesting stuff that continues to happen. But the big news this week will be the Xi Trump administration's meeting in Buenos Aires, Argentina. That'll come the 29th and 30th, and whether there's really something that happens with trade there. And the OPEC meeting as well. Both of those could have a huge impact. The prices of oil has slid pretty far, and that's been putting a lot of pressure, especially on corn, because it's viewed sometimes as just a simple component, or at least ethanol, which makes up, 35% of consumption of corn, is viewed as a component of gasoline. And so it rides with the price of oil some. I think this week should be a really important week for the marketplace. Do you have any insight as to where we might see things go?
Well, seasonally, corn generally erodes late November through December 6th, and then we generally have a small rally into Christmas, while beans, they generally stay range-bound through December 10th before eroding into the January crop report, and wheat generally basically just stays range-bound during this time period. But, you know, we've got the Chinese trade situation. We got the mess over in the Ukraine and Russia going on. They're not one to take anybody sort of to talk in between. And we've got that Brexit thing hanging over us, that seeing what's going to happen and how that's going to affect us along the way, along with First Notice Day come Friday for December corn.
So there is a whole lot to look at this week. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us. Anything else we should discuss before I let you go?
I think that's about it for today, Todd.
All right. Thank you so much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Now joined by Jay Solomon. He's been involved in livestock and manure management education for more than 25 years. Jay, thank you for being here. Can you tell me about your background just a bit, please?
Been with Extension for a number of years. Been here for about 18 years in Illinois and a few years before that in Missouri. And working in livestock has been part of what I've done for most of my career. Although in my position as an engineer and in my current role, working in environmental issues, I get into quite a few different topics from energy efficiency and clear down to some of the livestock and water quality issues. So it's kind of nice to be working in this area. It's one that's carried through all my career.
Are there best management practice guidelines for livestock in confinement?
If we look at it from a confinement standpoint, there are some definite things we can think about. One of the places we start with is really need to think about and manage and utilize that manure as a fertilizer. If we start from there, it does make it a lot easier to think about what are the other things we need to do. You know, one of the first things is make sure we're containing anything that has been, whether it be the actual manure, water running off of or running across a manure covered areas, those kinds of things. So we do the containment of it. We also look at keeping clear what we call clean water clean, but you keep the clean water clean, dirty water contained. So if we've got any place where we can divert water off of it, off of an area, we definitely try to do those kind of things. Then the next thing is treating it as a fertilizer. Once we have it in a containment, applying it at agronomic rates, you know, based on U of I ag agronomy recommendations, in which those recommendations now are looking at applying it with what is referred to as the maximum return to nitrogen. You'll hear the term MRTN, where you calculate what's that worth and applying that at a rate that is most economical and most effective for the crop production as well. The one caveat in there is on a lot of this manure, we actually need to look at what's a phosphorus buildup on it. So there are some phosphorus numbers we need to be aware of from a soil standpoint, which kind of brings up the other point. One of the things we want to work with is we need to make sure we get a good sample of the manure so we know what we're actually applying. But we also need to have a good idea of what our soil test is. Need a soil test on a regular basis. We also need to know what our production is out there so we're matching what's in the what we need to bring the soil up to meet that actual production yield that we've got out there, what we've pulled out of it, and replace that on a yearly basis. From that standpoint, we move forward to you know, what are the other things we can think about. It's things like injecting it or incorporating the manure immediately after it's been applied, and that reduces our losses to ammonia, along with just reducing the potential for it to be washed off in a rain event or volatilized and makes lost one way or the other, which the nutrient movement is offsite would be either rainfall moving the nutrients off in the water or volatilization of the ammonia off of it, which both cases we're losing nitrogen and possibly phosphorus in the rainfall event. Need to collect those samples of the recommendation out there is to collect those samples on a yearly basis. If you can collect them beforehand and get the sample test back, data back, that's a good way to do it. But the other way we talk about in a lot of the trainings is collect it yearly, keep a record of where you're going, keep a track of how it may be changing over time, and you look at what was last year's numbers, how did that compare to the years before, and use those to plan out your manure application for this year. And then you adjust any commercial fertilizers you put on top or any side dress into the next year based on what maybe changes you had when you get your soil sample or your manure sample back this year. Then there are the other pieces of it, like in the application area, observe those setbacks. Stay at least 200 feet away from water sources, 150 feet back from wells, 200 feet back from open water sources, and try not to apply or minimize the applications onto snow-covered and frozen areas. Those are a lot of the things that we talk about. We go through those kinds of things as part of the Certified Livestock Manager training that we talk to producers about, but it's also something we've talked to even the smaller producers who don't necessarily have to go through that training. They need to be thinking about those same best management practices.
Just a little additional information. You mentioned the MRTN, or the maximum return to nitrogen, and that is the maximum, not the maximum amount of nitrogen that should be applied, but the maximum amount of nitrogen for optimal yield that you might get, or optimum amount of nitrogen for the maximum yield. And you can find that rate on the nitrogen rate calculator for Illinois and all, for instance, of the 12 Midwestern states. And you just search Google for nitrogen rate calculator. You'll find it actually on the Iowa State University websites. Now, back to manure. Does it offer manure that is any benefits to water quality or soil health as opposed to synthetic fertilizers?
There are a lot of research and a lot of idea, a lot of belief that yes, there is. The thing that we are starting to really look at is what is that, and to be able to put hard numbers to it, I'm not sure we're right there at it, but we do know that it provides organic matter. A lot of times it's a little bit more pH balanced and nutrient balanced. And sometimes, and it's known that some of the nutrients are a little bit more available in manure than they are immediately available to the crop than what they are in some of your commercial fertilizers. And also as we apply them in the fall, they are, because of the way they're mixed, they're already somewhat a little more stable, not being as prone to being leached or lost through the winter time with rainfall events and leached downward quite as bad. But that's kind of a small piece. The other pieces they do with that organic matter and other things, they can kind of contribute to soil structure and water holding capacity, just because it is that organic matter you're applying. So there is some benefit to it. I mean, it is kind of the original. Manure is one of the original organic fertilizers.
Jay Solomon is with University of Illinois Extension. Our conversation is part of a broader nutrient loss reduction podcast that I produce, and we hear portions of it from time to time on the Closing Market Report. I'll try to bring you a couple of more on the livestock sector as we go through this week and maybe early next week. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Now joined by Dan O'Brien, he's at K-State and joins us once a month to talk about the agricultural energies. I did, and we'll put this right here because it's related to what Dan's going to talk about. I'll go back and look that biodiesel tax credit up. In fact, from the National Biodiesel Board, it says the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Representative Kevin Brady, he's a Republican out of Texas, released a proposal yesterday to make a technical correction, that happens fairly often, to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and to extend several expired tax credits, including the biodiesel and renewable diesel tax incentive. That's what I suggested was happening. The National Biodiesel Board welcomed the proposal for a multi-year extension of this important incentive, which would keep the credit at its current rate of $1 per gallon for 2018 through 2021. That's something new. Normally, it's a one-year extension, so longer, through 2021. And then here's the real new bit. Gradually reducing it to 33 cents per gallon by 2024, and then simply allowing it to expire. So that last part certainly is new and generally doesn't happen, although I think they're just glad to have it maybe out all the way through 2021. Dan O'Brien, thanks for being with us. I appreciate you taking the time. Am I right that they're probably not worried so much about the 33 cents in the expiration, but really just happy to have some clarity as to how long this is going to be in place?
Yes, it would sure make sense that up front they quote need the help now, and then economic conditions, the health of the industry, all of those factors will weigh in several years down the road when they confront the phasing out of that of that credit as you're talking about. The timing couldn't be better for the industry here. When we look at the profitability of biodiesel now for the first time in about a year and a half, by our numbers anyway, we're seeing at least a marginal loss for biodiesel plant production. So we have a cost of about $2.85 per gallon produced, a price of about $2.84, and a net loss of about 1 cent. And we had been seeing profits of 20, 30, 40 cents for in biodiesel production at times, especially in the last year or so. So that would be for plants in the Iowa and Illinois area. So again, in an effort to keep these processing industries healthy and going forward, and not have to have disrupting plant closures, et cetera, this is a bit of good news.
And you've looked, I know, because you've got a spreadsheet on this and others, at the health of the ethanol industry. They've been operating on fairly slim margins on the corn side, that is.
Yeah, this summer, I think, at least as I take it, Todd, as ethanol inventories built up and prices began to drop, we'd seen the price of ethanol move closer to $1.20, $1.25, thereabouts. We've seen the profitability of ethanol plants in the U.S., at least our estimated profitability, decline. And here for November, at least the data through about from the 1st to the 23rd, we're looking at a cost of ethanol production of about $1.35 by our numbers. And a price during that time frame, selling price, about $1.23. So gosh, that's about a 12-cent loss. That follows a 14-cent loss for the month of October by our estimates, and a little bit less, I think about 5 or 6 cents the month prior to that. So we're in the race to the bottom in terms of low corn prices, which would help profitability of plants. What's been offsetting that has outpaced it in terms of from an ethanol plant's point of view, has been the decline in the selling price of ethanol. We have seen some at least moderate holding steady of distillers grains prices, so that's been a good thing. And we still have low priced corn, but at this time, low priced corn to go into those plants. But at least at this time, the price of ethanol has fallen off enough that it really has made a difference. I would also say that price of the price ratio between, or relationship between, ethanol and RBOB gasoline had been pretty had been basically in a range where the ratio of ethanol, well, through August, September, October, we had about $1.30 or so. Ethanol price is about $1.99 to $2 in RBOB. Well, here and in about one in the last month, RBOB prices dropped pretty sharply. So now you're looking at looking at prices literally today, we're looking at about $1.24 ethanol price, about $1.44 RBOB. So that's the highest ratio of those two we've seen in a good long while.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much. Can you stay with me for just a second? Dan O'Brien, of course, is with K-State Extension, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Well, Dan, you and I had a discussion just before we started. You suggested that there was a difference from one side of the Corn Belt to the other in ethanol production and the profitability of these plants. Can you talk a little bit about that, too?
Yes, as you and I talk between Illinois and Kansas, Illinois being in the eastern central Corn Belt and Kansas out on the west, we in Kansas have higher corn input prices than you do there in Illinois. Again, the latest report's about $3.40 to $3.80 for Kansas cash corn prices. Illinois about $3.33 to $3.65, thereabouts. And we also have, on the income side, higher distillers grain, so that would be that'd be a net benefit for Kansas. The higher corn cost would be a benefit for Illinois. The big difference has been here in the last last bit of time that the ethanol prices there in the Eastern Corn Belt, $1.20, $1.27, are certainly higher than what we're seeing in Kansas. So by the time you bring all those issues into place, probably net benefit for Illinois ethanol plants as opposed to what we're seeing out here in the Western Corn Belt, particularly in Kansas.
So I have about 35 or 40 seconds left. Is this part and parcel of the way ethanol is exported out of the country?
Well, I would say that we in the Western Corn Belt have seen a number of plants have a deliberate strategy to head for the West Coast, you know, to try to be logistically in a better position to try to take advantage of what we can see out to the west. So at least with regard to the west, what strategy going west with ethanol supplies, that's been an overt strategy of the Western Corn Belt plants, again, to try to take advantage of their lower cost just because of less miles, and to try to have a make some money, quote, as they look at that California market.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. Just a quick reminder that I'll be traveling this afternoon towards Kansas City for the Kevin Van Trump Conference. That's the VTC 18 tomorrow and then again on Thursday. So you can expect to hear some things at least Thursday from there. I won't arrive until later in the day tomorrow, mostly because it doesn't start actually until tomorrow afternoon. So check that out, and I'll try to put some things up on my Twitter account as well, at Commodity Week. Now we're joined by Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'm thinking, Don, that as I head across the top of the state of Missouri, that I'll see an awful lot of snow, and I kind of hope roads are cleared up by the time I get there. Should be. I don't think there's anything else coming in the next couple of days there. What do you see?
Yeah, there's a bit of a break, but as cold as it's been behind the storm system that came through over the weekend, a lot of snow on the ground, and it's going to stick around here for quite a while. Is the trend that we're seeing here for the last days of November and into the first 10 days of December, for most of the nation, looks colder than normal, and more opportunities for winter weather coming our way. We're on schedule, as it stands right now, to have the coldest November in the lower 48 states since the 2014 November. So if you think it's been a cold month, you are correct. It's been that way for most of the country.
And you said maybe some more weather in early December. What do you see?
Well, what we see are several more storm systems, at least a couple, that will be traversing the nation's midsection and also some areas of the south central United States. We're going to see the possibility as we get into this weekend of a pretty good storm system burst up into the northern plains, up around the Dakotas, some of the parts of the northern Rockies. And then this will go across the northern and northwest part of the Corn Belt. Now, on the eastern side of this system, there's going to be some pretty good rains in the eastern Corn Belt, even some severe weather and some pretty good rains in the southeastern United States. So it's going to be an active pattern again for the second weekend in a row.
And then if you turn your attention to South America, how are crops doing there?
Not bad. Rainfall so far this start of the growing season down in the southern hemisphere has been pretty good, especially for Brazil. Adequate rainfall in most of the growing areas there as well. Argentina hasn't done bad either. Some of the northern and western areas have been a little bit drier. Argentina hasn't had as much rain, but so far so good. Soil moisture profiles are looking good in both countries at the moment.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, it's Giving Tuesday, and if you have not thought about where to make a gift just yet, maybe you can make a financial contribution right here to the ag programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Now, on Giving Tuesday, pick your charitable contributions. I suspect you already give to your church, probably maybe the local food pantry. Maybe you can find in your heart a little someplace else there in your community that you'd like to give. And maybe, too, you can make a phone call and make a gift here to Illinois Public Media and the agricultural programming. That's easy to do. You can do it at 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455 on this Giving Tuesday. Hey, thanks so much for being along with us for the ride this afternoon on the Closing Market Report. I'll come to you from Kansas City, Missouri, or someplace thereabouts tomorrow, and then, of course, on Thursday as well at the Van Trump Conference. I'm Todd Gleason.